truth or consequences. Tell the truth or suffer the consequences. Why is it we find it so hard to tell the truth? About 4 years ago, my wife, I believe, passed me an article about a preacher in Pennsylvania. His name, Jim Motes, at that time was 59 years old, pastor of the Christian Bible Fellowship in Newville. And he was being interviewed by the Patriot News regarding his SEAL experience that he liked to talk about in his sermons and among his family and parishioners in his church. Well, they interviewed him and they printed his story about some of his exploits in the SEALs. And some veteran SEALs apparently came across the article and realized that Mr. Motes had never been in the SEALs because key elements of his story were missing that any real SEAL would know. In fact, one of them commented his story was full of gaping holes that any SEAL could see straight through. It is very infuriating, he went on to say, to have these posers claim the honor that many good men have earned and died for. When Mr. Motes was confronted by a veteran SEAL about his story, he immediately recanted and came clean. But I think already what the shame that's been done to his name, his family, and to the church, and perhaps even the cause of Christ, for this man, let's put his picture up, all right? For this man to have said these things about himself that were not true. At the time of the article, it wasn't sure whether any legal measures would follow, and I wasn't able to discover anything that did come as a result of it. But it was sad because of the harm that was done, because of what may have been perceived by him to be an innocent little lie. The point I want to drive home today is this, that there is no such thing as an innocent little lie, because all lies lead to bigger consequences than we ultimately think. And we can't possibly know all the consequences of the lie at the time we tell it. And our text is a great example of this. David is on the run. He is fearful for his life. Saul is on his heels, and he thinks it's only a matter of time before Saul gets him. We saw that last week in chapter number 20, in verse number 3, when David said, "There's only a step between me and death." Now, what would you do? Where would David go? What relief could he find? Well, he goes south out of Gibeah, the headquarters, the palace of King Saul, and he heads to the city of Nob, where the priests live. He's hoping there, because of his connections with Samuel, that he might be able to find some favor from Ahimelech and the other priests that are there. Let's look at 1 Samuel chapter 21, beginning in verse number 1. I want to read just two verses at this time. 1 Samuel chapter 21, in verse number 1, the Bible says, "Then came David to Nob, to Ahimelech the priest, and Ahimelech was afraid at the meeting of David, and said unto him, Why art thou alone, and no man with thee? And David said unto Ahimelech the priest, The king hath commanded me a business, and hath said unto me, Let no man know anything of the business whereabout I send thee, and what I have commanded thee. And I have appointed my servants to such and such a place." It should be immediately apparent that David isn't on any official business from the king. What had happened in the previous chapter? David had told him via the arrows that he was shooting, "Get out of town. Saul is hot on the trail, and you're not going to survive if you hang around." But he gets to Nob, which incidentally is just 3 miles away, just about an hour's walking distance from the palace, and he resorts to lying. So what lessons are here for us from the life of David? I'd like to give you this main lesson, which is on the screen. Since even the best intentioned lie has terrible consequences, telling the truth is always your best escape. It is always better and best to tell the truth. And I think David is a good illustration of this. I have 3 points today. They're really 3 characteristics that are true of lying. And I hope that they will help us not only to investigate the text, but also to see our own frailty this way. The first point is this. Remember that lying is convenient. David is on the run. He needs some help. But the truth is, he doesn't know at this point whether his friends are his real friends or they're going to be his foes. He's only about 3 miles from the palace. Maybe the information will be quickly transmitted back to Saul, and he has to be careful. Well, Ahimelech immediately notices that there's a problem, and we see it in verse number 1. Ahimelech was afraid at the meeting of David. And why is he afraid? Because David is alone. Now, he knew king's officials didn't travel alone. No court official goes out without the king's entourage. So where is the bodyguard? Ahimelech knew something wasn't right. And so rather than come clean and say why he's there, David fabricates a story, which we find in verse number 2. Well, the king has commanded me a business, and he has said unto me, let no man know anything of the business whereabout I send thee. In other words, I'm on a secret mission, which wasn't true. It doesn't appear to David that this is a big deal. Ahimelech may or may not be for him at this point. In fact, the name Ahimelech means brother of the king. Now, if he's a priest, Ahimelech is in the tribe of Levi. We know that Saul was in the tribe of Benjamin, but they may have been related in some way through marriage. We're not sure. But it may have been that David is concerned that there might be some linking, and so therefore he chooses the route of subterfuge or the route of deception rather than coming clean and telling the truth. The point I want to make to you, the first of all, is that David is not alone. We have all been in circumstances where we have believed it would be more beneficial or convenient to tell something that is slightly not true rather than to give the whole truth. So I have put several stories in the message today for the sake of highlighting different ways that we tell a lie without necessarily giving a bold-faced lie. Here's one. My twin and I, in 1993, were returning to college in South Carolina, and this was the first year that we would actually have rights at this particular campus to have a car. You could drive a car as a freshman and sophomore to campus, but then they made you park it a lot off campus, and you couldn't use it the whole semester. But if you're a junior or senior, and you have enough semesters under your belt, they actually let you use your car for purposes of going into town and whatnot. That was just the policy at the time. It might even be different now. So it was our junior year we were facing, and we were on our way down. We got a later start than we wanted. It was during the night we were driving, and I had driven for a couple hours and turned it over to my twin. I didn't realize it at the time because I was drowsing, and I went to sleep in the passenger side, but he was having a hard time staying awake. And eventually, he did fall asleep behind the wheel, and he smacked our car into a concrete bridge, a wall. Thankfully, we were at a bridge when he veered off, and we didn't end up going across a median and into traffic. But the passenger side of the car was smushed. Talk about getting jolted from sleep. That was quite an experience. It caused us to careen down the highway, skidding, until he finally got it to the stop, got it off to the side of the road. My dad was traveling in another vehicle, taking some of our stuff, so he was able to get us helped. And thankfully, the car was still drivable, and we were able to continue on the drive to school and use the car, though it was mangled really terribly. We couldn't even access through the passenger side door because of the way it was mangled. Well, I was instructed that I would be meeting with the insurance adjuster, and since there were two cars and my dad couldn't drive both cars back, he ended up taking his car back and leaving the broken car in South Carolina with us, and the insurance adjuster would come to our site, and I was supposed to meet with him because my twin was having issues and upset and emotions and all that, so I would meet with the adjuster. So here was the pickle that I got put in. It would be better, I was told, that if you just said, you know, when the claims adjuster comes, you don't say anything at all, or if it comes up, dad was driving the car, not your brother. Because dad probably has accident forgiveness and all of that. It won't affect our insurance rates. You know how the story goes. Suddenly, I'm in a real pickle. I'm actually in school training to be a minister of the gospel. And now I'm being asked to fabricate a story, if need be, for the sake of the family. You, some of you, the scenario is not the same, but you've been in similar situations where family has put the heat on and said, this is what needs to happen, and you need to do this. Boy, did I have a wrestle in my spirit. You ever be troubled in your spirit? You have a hard time sleeping. You're praying, God, what do I do? You know, you want to honor your family, you honor your parents, but you're like, man, I cannot do this and sleep with myself. So we have conversations. I contacted a mentor, a coach, another, I believe it was a pastor, and asked for some help. Finally decided I couldn't go along and had to communicate that to my family. And so thankfully my family backed down and I was not put in a position where I had to tell an untruth. But it was made mighty powerful convenient just to go along with the family plan. I'm sure that's never happened in your family. Let's put the insurance adjuster up there. He's looking at the mangled mess. So we did end up getting the car fixed. The assessment and everything was handled, and the car actually ended up getting towed back to Pennsylvania, where I was from, and we got the car fixed. The main thing I wanted to say is I didn't have to lie. And though you're backed into a corner sometimes and people put the heat on, you don't have to lie. But if I don't lie, I might lose my job because my employer said this is the way it has to be. And this is all the other company needs to know. You go along with it or you're not employed here anymore. Well, you're backed into a corner, but you don't have to stay in that corner. There is always a way of escape. And the best way of escape for the Christian is always to tell the truth. Well, I might lose my job. Well, okay, there's still a God in heaven who knows about that and is able to provide for your family if you will follow His principles. Tell the truth. It is always the best escape. I'm trying to identify by telling stories from my life because I've been there. The heat gets put on and you have a choice to make. Am I going to go with the flow and do what's convenient, keep my job, keep my mouth shut, or are you going to stand up and say, no, that's wrong, and even if I lose my job, I am going to tell the truth. Sometimes even the best intentioned lies, we didn't mean to harm anybody, end up having terrible consequences, and for that reason, it is always right and always best to tell the truth rather than to adjust it. In fact, may I make an observation? I was in a conversation this week, and this thought came to my mind as I was helping counsel someone else. Let's bring the next screen up. You know, lying is convenient. And I want to talk a little bit about how this works. This is true because in the sermon I'm dealing with lying and truth. This is also true just about of any sin and your decision to do what's right. So on the front end, lying and sin, let's click. Look, it's mighty convenient to lie on the front end. It's easier in the long run, you're led to believe, if I tell the lie. In fact, Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 23, speaking of Moses, said that there is pleasure in sin for a season. On the front end, sin looks easy. This is why it's so easy for us to sin and why we fall to temptation. It's always easy on the front end. The problem is the Bible is always coaching us that on the back end, over here, there's a lot of painful regrets and you don't want to go that way. Terrible consequences if I tell a lie or if I sin against God. Easy on the front end, painful on the back end. Some of you know what I'm talking about because you did the easy on the front end and you got the painful on the back end. And this is what the Bible says actually in Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 12. And actually, if you want another reference, it's Proverbs chapter 16 verse 25. They say the same thing. There is a way which seems right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. It seems right up front, but on the backside you don't want it because it brings death. Sin always results in death. Romans chapter 6 and verse 23 says, for the wages of your sin is death. Everybody in this room is going to die one day, and the reason you're going to die is not because you had a car accident or you had a stroke or your heart stopped. It's because you sinned against God, and there are consequences on the backside for sinning against God, and death is a consequence. But you know what? I have learned in life, and don't you know this to be true too, this is self-evident, that when it comes to telling the truth or doing what's right, it's mighty challenging on the front end. As in the illustration I told you about my the car and the accident and what we're going to tell the insurance company. Mighty challenging, even difficult on the front end. But the Bible teaches us that if I would do that, if I just go ahead and do what's right, then on the back end I get wonderful rewards. Now here's the catch, right? If I'm going to go with number two, truth and right, I have to have faith in God that He will indeed bring about the good results on the back end and give me the wonderful rewards. It takes faith to live the Christian life and to do what's right. Hey, but this is the way God wants us to live. Mighty powerful, convenient to tell a lie. But as we've noted before, God gives us rules not to make life difficult. He's giving us these rules so that we can have the best in the end. So can we trust Him even when the truth isn't convenient? Since even the best intentioned lies have terrible consequences, tell the truth so you can escape. Point number two, lying is often compelling. You know, sin wouldn't be so easy if it weren't so terribly compelling. It should be no secret to you by now that the sin nature, which we all inherited from Adam, didn't go away the moment we got saved. Anybody perfect in here? Since you became a Christian, you live a perfect life? There's some that have that delusion that you can be perfect after you become a born-again believer. I'm not under that delusion. I live with myself every day. I know better. That sin nature is constantly tempting me, testing me, enticing me to do things I know the better of. So, and it does the same for you. And David's no different. He has a sin nature too. We've already identified David some months ago. According to Acts chapter 7, he is the man after God's own heart. But he still has feet of clay, and he's still tempted in this situation to tell a lie rather than to tell the truth. And under the pressure of the moment, there are times when we'll be tempted to do the same. Unless you've decided up front that I'm always going to tell the truth. Speak the truth. Paul says in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 15, speak the truth in love. So why is lying so compelling? Just a couple thoughts here. Number one, I believe David lies because he says, I'm afraid. Now the text doesn't tell us that, so I'm going to read this into the text. I think the text suggests it. It suggests it from the previous chapter in chapter 20, verse number 3. He says there's just a step between me and death. This text doesn't mention that he's fearful, but I believe that's motivating here. He's not quite sure he can trust Ahimelech. And so better just to keep him in the dark. And maybe he's not afraid that Ahimelech's going to turn him in, but he's afraid of what Saul might do if Ahimelech does help David. So therefore, it's best for him if I tell a lie. You know how you do that? This lie isn't for me. It's for her. It'll be better in the long run for her. You know, because if I tell my wife where I really was, that could just start an argument, and I don't want to go there. So it's better for her. You know how we rationalize things. And that might be what's driving David at this point. Hey, I'm afraid maybe a lie in this case would be better for myself. And maybe he is thinking of Ahimelech. So fear often drives our desire to lie. We're afraid of what others might find out. We're afraid of what others might think of us. We're afraid of our reputation. So we lie. The book of Proverbs, chapter 29, verse 25 says, the fear of man brings a snare, but whoso puts his trust in the Lord shall be safe. That's the whole point of the message. Did you get that? Memorize that verse and you got the message, right? All right? You'll be safe if you tell the truth. Trouble if you tell a lie under fear. How many times have we been driven by fear to tell a lie? Here's a story that might put this in perspective. This isn't original with me. Let's bring the next slide up. On a beautiful fall day, four of my granddaughter's friends decided to go for a drive instead of showing up for class. Go ahead, put the picture up. So when they did arrive, the girls explained to the teacher that they had a flat tire. The teacher accepted the excuse, much to the girls' relief. But then she said to all the girls, now, since you missed the quiz that we had this morning, we're going to take that right now. So each of you take out a half sheet of paper, and each of you sit in the four corners of the room. So the girls went to the four different chairs in the four corners of the room. She says, the quiz today has one question. Which tire was flat? Yeah, for fear we often tell a lie, but God has ways of figuring out our lies, doesn't he? Just like that teacher did. I think David told a lie. He was compelled to tell a lie because he was afraid. I think he was also compelled to tell a lie because he was in need. This is what this text tells us. We haven't read the verses, so let's go ahead and read them now. Chapter 21, verse number 3, the Bible says, now therefore, what is under thine hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread in mine hand, or what there is present. And the priest answered David and said, there is no common bread under mine hand, but there is a hallowed bread, if the young men have kept themselves at least from women. And David answered the priest and said unto him, of a truth, women have been kept from us about 3 days since I came out, and the vessels of the young men are holy, and the bread is in a manner common, yea, though it were sanctified this day in the vessel. The tabernacle is in Nob right now. We don't have any historical reference of why it's moved from Shiloh to Nob. Remember, it isn't until David's reign. Actually, David brings the Ark of the Covenant to Jerusalem, but it isn't his son Solomon that builds the temple. So right now, they're still worshiping in a tent called the Tabernacle, thank you. And the Tabernacle has moved. It used to be, when they first moved in the land, it was in Shiloh. Right now, it's in Nob. And inside the tent that they called the Tabernacle, they had different pieces of furniture for worship. All right? Inside the first chamber, there were 3 pieces of furniture. On the right was the table of showbread. On the left was the candlestick. And at the rear of the room, before the Holy of Holies, was the altar of incense. Remember this? All right. So one of those pieces was the table of showbread. And on that table, every day, there was fresh bread put out, 12 loaves to represent the 12 tribes. So what Ahimelech is telling David is, you can have one of these loaves that we've removed from the table when we put the fresh loaves out. Are you following me? Did I lose anybody? Anybody need help? Anyone willing to admit you need help? All right, nobody is wanting to admit that they need help. All right, so yeah, it's a day-old bread. Exactly. So Ahimelech says, that's all I have. But according to the law in Leviticus, forgive me, I don't have the reference, it was only supposed to be eaten by the priests or the priests' families. However, because there was no other bread available, Ahimelech was willing to make it available to David if he agreed just to keep it, if he could agree to say, yeah, the men have been walking in cleanness, or according to the book of Leviticus, holiness, they were not unclean, having defiled themselves with women. David assured Ahimelech of that, and so David was able to procure this food in an emergency from the tabernacle. Now, was David breaking the law or the rules? Technically, yes. But it's interesting, Christ actually comments on this in Mark chapter 12. Matthew chapter 12, verses 3 to 7. And he refers to that as an example that the law is not to trump life, that life is more important than the law. And there are times when the spirit of the law is enhanced by bending that restriction. Sometimes the Pharisees were so dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's that they were neglecting the weightier matters of the law. The book of Matthew says in Matthew chapter 23, verse 23, you've not done love, mercy, and judgment to people. So Christ approved of that, even though it wasn't the normal procedure. And David was able to secure, through his lie, 5 loaves of bread. But David needed something else too. That wasn't the only thing he needed. Let's look at verses 8 and 9. David said unto Ahimelech, and is there not here under thine hand a spear or sword? For I have neither brought my sword nor my weapons with me, because the king's business required haste. And the priest said, the sword of Goliath the Philistine, whom thou slewest in the valley of Elah, behold, it is here wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. If thou wilt take that, Take it, for there is no other save that here. And David said, there is none like it. Give it to me. Well, this sword had some historical merit. David had held it in his hand and lopped off Goliath's head to end the battle that day. Why it's at the tabernacle, nobody knows. Maybe David had devoted it to the Lord, committed it as an offering to the Lord, and it just had traveled with the tabernacle. We don't know. But it's still here. It's the only weapon available. David needed it, and he was willing to tell a lie about it. To me, this is significant. Why don't you look back with me at verse number 8. When he asked for the weapon, which came after asking for the bread, he repeats the lie and reinforces it. Verse number 8 says, because the king's business required haste. He didn't just tell the lie, he told it again. Have you noticed how that works? One lie leads to another lie leads to another lie, and you get in this web of lies, and you go deeper and deeper and deeper, and you can never get out of it because you told so many lies. In fact, you often get caught in your lies because you can't remember all the lies you told, so you can tell them the same way and avoid getting in trouble. Anybody figured that out yet? All right? Don't you wish your kids would figure that out quicker than... All right. Sometimes it takes a long time for people to figure that out. And David is reinforcing the lie. You know, I've thought of situations in our past history. What if in Watergate... What if... Next slide. What if in Watergate somebody had just chosen to tell the truth? Is that the next slide? It is. Right there. What if just somebody early in the investigation said, okay, this is what really happened. Instead of dancing around with all the subterfuge and all the delusions and all the deception, maybe Nixon would have finished his presidency. Or how about the Iran-Contra affair, right? For those of you who remember that. What if somebody would just have come out and saved our government and the Congress a whole lot of time and investigation and all that if somebody would just tell the truth? Hey, and wouldn't it be nice if we could get a politician that would ask for our vote for the White House who could just, we could just rely on them to tell the truth? For crying out loud, you're in the nation's highest office. Can you tell the truth? Why should we vote for you? I refrain from putting pictures on the screen. You know who I'm talking about. It's not just one person, all right? It's so hard to get someone to run for office. We can count on them to tell us the truth. And we want them to make all the decisions. I want to boycott this election. I want to not vote ever. This is just ridiculous. It's sad that people don't even care anymore because they're lying as much as the people we're putting into leadership. What's even sadder are there are Christians, maybe some in this room, who have justified telling lies to your family, to your spouse, and as a result, we're getting exactly what we deserve. Leaders who lie to us. There will always be reasons to tell a lie or to twist the truth. And as Christians, we not only know better, we're compelled to speak the truth in honor of the Father who claims us as His sons and daughters. He watches what we do every single day, and this is what He asks of us. In 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 21, the Scripture says, providing for honest things, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. Final thought today. Did I put that out of order? Boy, I'm sorry. You're doing a great job. Number 3, and we're through. The text shows us that lying has consequences that cannot be avoided. Just as a gun is fired and the bullet never retracted, so it is with lies. They cannot be rescinded. Yes, it's true. God can forgive. God forgives all sin, and thank God for it. None of us would make heaven without forgiveness. And we need plenty of it all through life. Every single day I'm asking for it. I don't know where you are on that, but I ask for it every day. But you cannot undo the collateral damage that sin causes. And David learns this the hard way. I want you to see some of the terrible consequences as a result of this seemingly insignificant lie. First of all, I want you to notice verse number 7 of our text. Chapter 21, verse 7. Now a certain man of the servants of Saul was there that day, detained before the Lord. And his name was Doeg, an Edomite, the chiefest of the herdmen that belonged to Saul. Doeg is an Edomite, which means he's from a neighboring nation. Why he's in Saul's company, we're not sure. He may have been hired, or may have been taken in an earlier battle and been a slave assigned to Saul's herds. He's called the chiefest of the herdsmen here. May mean that he was over the herdsmen, or it might suggest that his size, that this was a bruiser, a big guy, you know, kind of like me, and just commanded attention and respect by his size. Thanks. I'm glad some of you can smile. So we don't know exactly, but Doeg is there. And it's interesting, did you notice this in the text? He's detained before the Lord. You know how God somehow, you just think, I can get away with this lie, no one will ever know. And then God just puts somebody who happens to see you. And you're just, how did that get, this is a big town, nobody should, and there was your best friend of your teenage son is right there and he sees the whole thing. And he tells you. Yeah, it happens. You know, that's why the book of Numbers says, Numbers chapter 32, verse 23, be sure your sin will find you out. You sinned against the Lord, be sure your sin will find you out. And Doeg's there to report what happens to King Saul. Now we have to flip over to chapter 22 to see the fallout from this lie. Saul's begging for an answer. In verse number 9, Doeg finally speaks up. 22:9, then answered Doeg the Edomite, which was set over the servants of Saul, and said, I saw the son of Jesse coming to Nob, to Ahimelech the son of Ahitub, and he inquired of the Lord for him, and gave him victuals, and gave him the sword of Goliath the Philistine. And incidentally, there's another lie in this text, because all Ahimelech did for David was give him food and give him the sword. He did not inquire of the Lord or ask for a spiritual direction. That's not in the text. Doeg's added or embellished it to make David look bad. But at any rate, Doeg reports it to King Saul, and as a result, there's a great loss of life. One of the consequences of lying here, the biggest one, the 85 priests die because Saul immediately calls for Ahimelech, has a mock trial. The sentence is passed down. He doesn't even care. Ahimelech says, hey, I had no idea. Do you want to see this in the text? This is verse number 14 of the text. Ahimelech answered the king and said, and who is faithful among all the servants is David, which is the king's son-in-law, and goeth at thy bidding, and is honorable in thine house. Did I then begin to inquire of the God for him? Be it far from me. He did not ask help or counsel from the Lord or pray for God's blessing on David over Saul. Let not the king impute anything unto his servant, nor to all the house of my father, for thy servant knew nothing of all this, less or more. But the king decided, thou shalt surely die, Ahimelech, thou and all thy father's house. Now this is something. This is the Levites had a priest, and the priest had sons, and they all took care of the tabernacle and the worship. And Saul said, kill them all. And nobody would do it except Doeg. And this is down in verse number 20. Oh, flip too many pages. Verse 18, rather. The king said to Doeg, turn thou and fall upon the priests. And Doeg the Edomite turned and he fell upon the priests and slew on that day 85 persons that did wear a linen ephod. All of them priests. Now, I want you to think about the poor trade-off here. Is that, what's, I forget, what, put it up here. I already did that. Give me the next one. He gets 5 loaves of bread to spare a few men's lives, and as a result, 85 people die. Terrible consequence. He gets 1 sword from Goliath that he can use to defend himself, and 85 people die at the end of Doeg's sword. Terrible trade-off. Terrible consequences from what appeared to be at the time a rather innocent little lie. Oh, that we were just as convinced that when we lie, we do more harm than good. We bring down the house, not build it up. We invite trouble on our lives and on our households. Lies are damaging and they are deadly. Now, I'm not saying that every lie you tell will bring death, but you never know which one will if you tell lies. You never know what your lie might do. This comes from an article in The Explorer that came out in September of 2014. Some of you still read the paper, I bet. The Explorer News here, Northwest Tucson. You've heard of swatting? Let me tell you about swatting. On Thursday, September 4th, the Oro Valley Police, this is 2014, the Oro Valley Police Department received a call about a quarter till 10 from a man who told the police that his father had just shot his mother and he was hiding in his closet. He went on to tell the police that his father had been drinking and could not safely leave the house. Then the line was disconnected. 16 Oro Valley police officers responded to the scene. A short time later, the man in the house was contacted and asked to come out unarmed. He walked out with his wife, very much alive and well, and their son, unbeknownst to him, he's in Flagstaff playing video games at the time this all transpired. The call to the police turned out to be a prank call. Now, fortunately, no personal injury happened to either the father or the mother. But any of the unknown factors could have changed. A policeman could have been surprised, a gun could have been fired, and somebody could have been hurt in a deadly fashion because of a lie. Something somebody intended to be funny could have turned into a fatality. I need to wrap this up because you're bored with me. I can tell you're starting to go to sleep. It's not just the loss of life here. By killing the 85 priests, including the high priest, what do you think happened to worship in Nob? It almost totally eliminated it. According to verse number 20 of our text, only one of Ahimelech's sons left and lived, somehow escaped. His name is Abiathar, and he came out, and he fled and hid with David. And as a result, Abiathar is not with the tabernacle, and apparently worship either was at a minimum or completely suspended as a result of that. I just say that because there are always other losses than the ones we immediately think of because of lies. Yet I'm still not convinced that all of you are convinced that lying is bad. Because I bet some of you are saying, but there are times that I just cannot be 100% truthful. And almost always I get the same scenario. Maybe you've heard of it before. All right, so you go down to the store with your wife. Let's just say you're going shopping with your wife. Now, I don't know why you'd want to do that, but if you did want to go shopping with your wife this week to the Kohl's, and you happen to go in there, and she gets a pile, and she heads to the dressing room, and you're thinking, this is going to be a long day. All right? And while she's in there trying on different outfits, this rather large woman comes out of the dressing room in something that does not do her any kind of justice. And because she can't find her husband or someone else in her party, she suddenly spots you and she says, "How do I look?" What are you going to say? Now, what are you going to say? You're going to say, "Man, I can't think of a better person in that dress," or, "Man, you look stunning." And you know in your heart that that really isn't the right, truthful thing to say. Now, first, can I just say something about this? I've been shopping from time to time with my wife for almost 15 years. Actually, I think we did some clothes shopping even before we were married a time or two. Hey, I have never been in that situation. No woman has ever come out of a dressing room and asked me, "How do I look?" So sometimes we come up with these scenarios and they're never actually happening. But if it did, and maybe you have a scenario that has happened to you, there are most of the times there are positive things you can say without lying. You could say, "That really is a beautiful dress, but I don't think that's the right dress for you." You could say, there are things that you could come up with that would be positive and not demeaning without lying. And if you really felt like there is no way I'm going to get out of this without telling an untruth, then I would revert to what Thumper says in Bambi. Which is, if you can't say nothing good, don't say nothing at all. All right. Let's not make excuses for doing what God has asked us to do. Since even the best-intentioned lies often have terrible consequences, telling the truth is always the best option and offers you the best escape. Lying has almost become a way of life in our culture. I mean, my mind was spinning with illustration after illustration of people in high-profile places that lie and are lying and have been caught in lies. Google lying on Google today and you'll get more stuff than you ever want to read. There is just, in the news, terrible. People lie on their resumes. In fact, I was reading a report from USA Today. 33% of college graduates said that they would lie on a resume if it helped them land a job. 33%. That's a third of people. I bet that's a conservative figure. But as a Christian, you have a different calling. You have a different responsibility. As children of the Heavenly Father, you must put Him on display. Not only will telling a lie, or telling the truth rather, honor Him, but it will keep you out of the most trouble in the long run. May God help us. Let us pray.